Hi, friends. Welcome to the By Faith Podcast. I'm your host, Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week this season, I'm talking with a guest about how they are pursuing devotion to God by fighting sin and learning to delight in Him. Through their stories, we're learning how we too can fight for wholehearted allegiance to King Jesus. Well, friends, we did it. Today's episode wraps up season 6. I've really enjoyed talking with my guests, and I hope you've enjoyed listening in on our conversations. I'm going to take a bit of a break so I can work on a writing project. I'm actually working on a Bible study, you guys, which is a first for me, and I'm super excited about it. Thank you so much for listening and supporting By Faith this season. It's such a joy to create this for you. I hope you also enjoyed hearing about my book that released in March, With All Your Heart. Thank you for those of you who joined my launch team, read the book, came to my book launch event, and sent me words of encouragement. If you haven't read it yet, summer would be a perfect time to grab a group of friends and study it together. If you do, send me pictures. I always love hearing from readers and listeners of the podcast. This episode was sponsored by The Good Book Company, publishers of Born Again This Way. In this powerful and personal book, Rachel Gilson describes her own unexpected journey of coming out and then coming to faith and what came next. As she does so, she addresses many of the questions that Christians living with same-sex attraction are wrestling with, and she argues that it really is possible to live a life that's both faithful and fulfilling. Pick up a copy at thegoodbook.com or wherever good books are sold. Friends, I'm thrilled to share today's episode of By Faith with you. My guest today is Lily Park. Lily is an assistant professor at Southern Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. And in our conversation today, Lily talks about how she ended up there as a student first and then as a professor now. She also talks about the challenges she's faced as a woman in academic leadership and seminary and what kinds of conversations she's consistently having with female students who are pursuing seminary education. Then we talked about fear. Lily talks about how she's faced down fear in her work and how she's faced down fears regarding the future. We also get into a whole wonderful conversation about singleness. So friends, there is a lot here, and I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation as much as I enjoyed having it. Here, friends, is my conversation with Lily Park. Thank you, Lily, for joining me on my podcast. This is a treat for me.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, of course, I have to tell the story of when I first got to meet you in person. I hadn't met you yet.
Okay.
But we were in a room full of women talking, and there were some men in the room who were listening and asking questions, and we were sharing with them, you know, we were kind of talking about women in leadership and in Christian spaces, and you piped up. One of the men said, you know, this is so important that we really want to do this well. And you piped up and said, well, is now a good time to ask for a raise? Because it was your boss who said that. I thought that was so funny.
Yeah, I think everyone remembered me by that comment a year later at our next meeting. So
It was awesome, because I don't know if you had said anything quite yet. And so when you said that, I was like, whoa, I love her. I want to get to know her.
Well, that was God's kindness, that it was taken humorously and that people received it well and that I didn't get fired. So I'm glad for that, that it went well.
Your boss received it as a joke?
Yes, yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
That was awesome. Well, tell us about you. For anybody who doesn't know you, please introduce yourself and tell us what you are doing currently in life.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So my official title is Assistant Professor of Biblical Counseling at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And I teach courses on life issues, issues related to women and practical theology. And that's really the area that I'm passionate about, is bringing God's word to life in how we live our daily lives before God. So that's in a nutshell of what I teach. And then I also meet with women for coffee and meetings and trying to encourage them, whether they are a student or working, trying to balance a job and studies and family responsibilities, trying to just be like a Paul to a Timothy in a way, and just gently remind them that I know what it's like to, but God will sustain us if this is His will. So hang in there, and just to offer them practical advice as well. So I love that part, meeting with the women.
So you're passionate about encouraging women as they pursue what they're going to do after seminary?
Yes, I am, because I know what it's like to be a woman in a seminary context. And it was a different culture. It was just a whole new world for me. And I there were a couple of women who were like mentors to me, but it was so precious. And so I want to be like one of those women for these women that I'm meeting.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're older than me, sometimes they're younger, because we have students of all ages and backgrounds. But one commonality is this experience in seminary that is quite unique, and it can be really challenging for some people who are coming from a secular context or even a church context. And so I want to encourage them to hang in there, to persevere, so that they can fully focus on their studies and make the most of their campus life, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, so what are the challenges that you are seeing? Kind of what are the themes that women are bringing to you? What are the challenges specifically they're facing in a seminary context?
Yes. So for women, I think it depends also on their interests and goals. But one question I'm asked often is, you know, I would like to do this, but I'm not sure how it'll play out as a woman. So job, for instance, what are my opportunities? And so trying to think creatively with them, because one wisdom I try to tell women is that, well, if we fixate so much on the job title, we're probably going to not be very successful in how far we go with the job opportunities. At least I know that's been true in my own life. The job title didn't always match the wonderful opportunities I had. So I try to encourage even men to look beyond the title of the job and focus more on the responsibilities of job description, and see if there's valuable skills and experiences that will equip you for what you're wanting to do long term.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's been helpful based on a lot of students' feedback, because it's like, well, if I want to be a pastor, I'm looking for a job that has pastor in the title. Or if I want to be, well, not among women, but you know what I mean.
Right.
But for women, if they want to be, let's say, a Bible teacher, a women's ministry leader, you don't see those job descriptions or job titles often. But oh my goodness, there are so many opportunities if we would look beyond the titles and look at more of that, the paragraphs that follow the job title. And if we can also think more big about the job and the opportunities that comes with it, because sometimes it starts out with a quote lesser role, and then you build relationships and people identify strengths in you, and they see something that you don't even see in yourself, and they might propose, you know what, I think you need to apply for this job. And then the woman is more like, oh, I never thought about that. Are you sure? And so it's through that relationship that developed, because you're willing to start in a lesser role and give people an opportunity to see your gifts and talents.
That's such good advice, Lily. I actually went to seminary. I don't know if I've talked to you about that before. I got a counseling degree at Southwestern. And I think for women, it is obviously much more difficult to know what is the path for me after seminary. And it's been interesting because it's developed so slowly over time. And it's like God takes me one place and then another place. And it's all, like you said, it's not something I necessarily would have pursued or thought this is a great opportunity. But over time, he has shown me where to go. I would love, I'm really fascinated by how people get to where they are. So I would love to hear how you got to where you are.
Yes, it is quite amazing because I never thought I'd be where I am. And people say things like, wow, you must really like studying because I've been in school for a long time. Or I don't know. It's just interesting to hear people's assumptions and guesses. But let's see. Well, my undergrad was actually in business, and I worked at a great company, a consulting firm, and I liked the job. I enjoyed it. I even was promoted my first year. And so I'm thinking, all right, this is where I'm going to continue to serve, and then do ministry outside of the work hours, because I was involved in college ministry and women's. But then the Lord used 9/11 to redirect my focus. I actually lost colleagues at the Pentagon. And so, yes, it was very personal about what is life ultimately about.
And were you working at the Pentagon?
I was not. We had clients with the government. And so one of the persons who died at the Pentagon was a leader that I actually didn't know very well, but my brief encounters with him, I had so much respect for him, and he was someone I wanted to learn more from. Wow. And so I was very saddened when I heard that he was there, which he was there often. So that led me to, what is the purpose of life? What do I want to do? I'm in my early 20s, and I'm thinking about sort of questions you ask when you're in a midlife crisis in your 40s, maybe.
Yeah.
And it was good. I realized that I like my job. I'm thankful for it, but it's not my passion, or it's not what I want. I want to be careful with that, because we don't always need to do our passion or pursue our passions, but I wanted to do something where I could really invest my 40 hours or more in something that I think God was calling me to do, or gave me a strong desire to do. And I remember one of the things that kept popping into my mind was, I really enjoy teaching and discipling women. But I had no idea how to do that as a job. Because this is a long time ago. And I worked with men who went to seminary, or who were students. I didn't know any women in seminary. And the Lord brought, in that time, it was perfect. The Lord brought this godly couple to our church. And the wife was the first woman I met who went to seminary.
Ooh.
And she was so encouraging. And she was so honest with me about, well, watch out for this and be careful of this, but do this, and trying to portray what seminary life is like. But of course, it's never the same thing as being in seminary.
Right.
For yourself, but it was still helpful. And she gave me a lot of courage to be serious about it. And then someone told me about biblical counseling as a way of learning how to apply scripture to daily living. And I never knew about biblical counseling. So I went to this one-day symposium in New York, and I flew up there, went to the symposium, fell in love with it. And I asked, where can I get more of this training? And they told me about some schooling options, and I applied. And then I quit my job. I went to the master's college and did my MA in biblical counseling. And so I was starting all over in a sense, and I did not know what was going to happen. I left a secure job that had a pretty good, you know, path
salary,
in the future.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Salary. Salary. Yes. I feel like the older I get, the less I earn in a way compared to my early 20s.
Yeah.
I joke about that. I just joke about that because it was a very comfortable career in that sense, but no regrets, no regrets. But
may I ask how old you were at that time when you made that switch?
Yes, so I probably was maybe 24,
okay.
25. I was definitely not over 25, I don't think.
Okay, so you're pretty young.
Yes, yes, early 20s. Because I was there just for a couple of years, and mm-hmm. then 9/11 happened, so.
Okay. Okay, so you went to the master's college, got your yes. biblical counseling degree.
Yep, and then, so this is, again, a reminder of the Lord's faithfulness. I just thought, how am I going to get a job in doing women's ministry or biblical counseling? Because I wanted some experience, but a lot of people were saying, oh, there's not many opportunities out there. Even the men have limited opportunities. So then the Lord provided an opportunity at the church I was attending. And the woman who was an administrative assistant to the pastor of discipleship and counseling, she was having her first child. So she was leaving her position, and I applied for it, and I got the job. And so it was a full-time position where I was literally learning from this pastor the ins and outs of the ministry of counseling, discipleship, funerals, and caring for like hospital visits, yeah. things like that. So I learned a lot by working with him and watching him. So that was a good experience. And then I wanted to learn more of God's word. So I didn't really tell too many people. I prayed about it. And I had some brothers in Christ that encouraged me to consider seminary. And then the Lord led me to Southern Seminary ultimately. And it's interesting because I never heard of Southern Seminary at that time, but just different, God used different people to direct me there. Yeah. And
so had you come from outside the Southern Baptist Convention? Yes. This was your first experience with Southern Baptist life.
Yes. Yes.
That was probably quite a, I don't know. I don't even know the word, but you mentioned earlier, there's a unique culture at seminary, and there's mm-hmm. unique culture at each seminary. So
yes.
to come from outside the Southern Baptist world into Southern would be, it'd be
more.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes. No, you're so perceptive there. It's true, because there's a separate culture and history within Southern Baptist church. And so there's a lot of learning curve, and I'm still learning in some ways of the Southern Baptist history. And because I grew up non-denominational, the churches I attended and served at. So and the church I attended and served was part of where John MacArthur was the pastor. So it was very non-denominational, but I think it was good also yeah. in a way for me yeah. to be exposed to people from different backgrounds,
yeah.
religious church.
And so you came there as a student, but then now you work there on staff, on faculty.
At Southern?
Yeah.
So I came as a student, and then I was pursuing my MDiv in Christian ministry, and I had an opportunity. So let's see, I had an opportunity to be like a professor's assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about this is that I don't remember other females being a professor's assistant or grader for like a mixed gender class. So I think I was the first one in my recollection of doing that. And it didn't really hit me until later that was pretty unusual. Because I was just thinking of what an opportunity to learn and grow. So that's probably another formative experience in my life where I got to learn more of the curriculum, the syllabus, development, things that happen in the outside of the classroom, how to interact with the students and their questions, decisions that professors have to make. It was helpful because the professor that I was working under, we would talk about the latest dilemma or questions, and I learned a lot by being a participant in yeah. that conversation.
Yeah. So. I'm imagining all of these steps that you've taken in your life moving across. I was imagining you near Washington, D.C. before, but I don't know if that was accurate, but trying changing jobs, total career path change, then going into a seminary culture, that Southern Baptist culture you had not grown up in. I would imagine there are many times where there would be opportunities for fear to set in and maybe even shrinking back a little bit. Has that ever been the case for you? Are you, do you tend to struggle with fear or no?
Oh, yes. I definitely do. I think it's evolved over the years and how fear plays out. So when I, to give a couple of examples, when I first came to seminary, I wrestled with adjusting to this new world and trying to process this different culture, especially as a female. It was just, I think you went to seminary, Christine, so you know how it can be awkward between men and women in seminaries. It's almost as if you're not going to marry this person, don't talk to this person, that kind of culture. You know what I mean? That was so foreign to me because I came from a business background where I'm traveling and working with men, and it wasn't about romance, right, at least in my professional experience. And so that
Yes. I mean, I know what you're talking about. People listening may not understand. Can you help understand, describe what some of the challenges you faced in that transition, some of the things you're experiencing that were hard for you?
Yes. So it wasn't like devastating hard, that kind of hard, but it was more of, in relation to fear of people's perception of you and having to be extra guarded that you aren't giving the wrong impression in how you interact with the opposite sex. So that was more of what was on my mind.
Meaning that they might think you were wanting to date them, or that they would think, oh, she's wanting to be a pastor and...
I think it's both. I think there's men who think that it's less now. We live in a different time. There's still some of that now, but I definitely notice a difference being back in at seminary now compared to over 10 years ago. But back then, I definitely think there were less women, so there were more questions of bewilderment of, are you wanting to be a pastor? That kind of thinking, or what are you planning to do?
Why are you even
seminary
here?
Degree, right? Yeah. Right. If you're not going to be a pastor, so it's more of this assumption that people who attend seminary is for pastoral leadership.
Right.
So if you're a woman in a conservative denominational context, it raises questions in some men's minds, not all, but some.
Yeah.
And I was in seminary because of men who encouraged me to pursue it. So I realized that there was a spectrum of views among men, and just learning how to, learning how to navigate that conversation with grace and wisdom.
Did it make you question yourself, or did it make you more emboldened to be there and to have those conversations when it was appropriate and applicable?
Yes. So I didn't have too many of those kinds of comments or questions. Honestly, I didn't. But I know other women have. And for me, it was helpful because I had professors. I had men and women who were like mentors, and they were just greatly encouraging and supportive. So I knew I could knock on their door or talk to them over coffee about struggles. But I will say, I didn't realize this until later. I think that atmosphere over time can affect you to try to not sound too confident because you could be trying to be like a pastor, like a leader over men. And I think I, in some ways, I was trying to be careful that I'm not trying to be like a pastor by not giving the impression of being too confident among men. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does make sense. I think that there's a lot of fear on both male and female side related to the idea of complementarianism. Mm-hmm. And I know exactly what you're talking about, because I do have opportunities to go into SBC denominational spaces, whether I'm teaching somewhere or interacting with certain people. And I do know exactly that fear. Mm-hmm. Because you walk into a room and you're not quite sure where everyone stands. Mm-hmm. And so you really, I feel like I sometimes find myself being very, very careful and maybe in not necessarily healthy way.
Yes.
But I think also men sometimes feel fearful that they're going to be labeled mm-hmm. as too liberal, or, you know, that they're not yeah. actually complementarian. And so right. it kind of creates this weird
yes.
thing.
Right. It does. Since then, so this is especially as I was leaving seminary, I'll give you an example, and this might be helpful. It was a class where we were teaching the Bible and receiving feedback, and I really enjoyed it. But one of the comments the professor gave me, I remember, was that I would sound more confident. And I thought that was interesting, because it's not that I wasn't confident, but I think I was trying to be careful of sounding overly confident. And because I came from a business background where you had a level of confidence in that context with lots of men and women, but it was a different context. And so being in the seminary context, I think I unknowingly learned how not to sound overly confident and be misperceived. And then that was something that I had to, I was thankful for that feedback, even if I didn't think it was an accurate assessment of how I felt in teaching. But I realized the perception didn't match how I was feeling, mm-hmm. or the perception didn't match the reality for me. That's a better way of saying it. And so I thought, what is going on in my life? What am I fearful about? What do I need to work on and change? Who do I need to talk to? So it was a good self-reflective evaluation time in my life, because the Lord provided an opportunity to teach full-time soon when I started my doctoral studies, and that was unexpected. And I needed to think about these issues, because I'm going to be teaching a lot more, right?
Yeah.
And so it was good that I didn't recognize that perception.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what you, when you started addressing that with yourself and realizing perception and reality didn't match, how did you face that fear? What did you do?
Yes. So one thing that he even shared with me is, Lily, find your voice. And it was encouraging to me in the sense that I don't need to compare myself to other teachers, to other speakers, but God has created each of us uniquely with different personalities, strengths and weaknesses, and presentation skills, et cetera, et cetera. And I need to allow myself time to figure out how has God designed me and how I can use that in teaching his word. And I think some of that comes through experimentation and asking people for feedback. Mm-hmm. And so that was a part of it. And to be honest, just practice, mm-hmm. and getting critiqued by other colleagues and seeking that feedback, strengths and weaknesses, and being okay with that, because I wanted to grow. I wanted to be a better teacher, and I still want that. And there's areas to grow, but I needed to invite people to not be afraid to point out areas of growth in my own life. Mm-hmm. And then another part is I worked with some great men at this other school that really supported and encouraged me. And it was a different, background. And so, I think that was good for me as well, mm-hmm. to just remember. It was just good.
They had seen something in you and they,
yes,
they encouraged you for a reason.
Right. There wasn't this baggage as much of me being a female. It was just more looking at my competency and just trying to engage with me as a person who's wanting to study, research, write just like them. Right. And there was this mutual respect that I instantly felt. And so I think that also gave me healthy confidence to not be afraid, mm-hmm. of sharing my thoughts and being misjudged, yes. of my motives.
Yeah.
It gave me this freedom to be open. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it was good for me as someone who's trying to gain more experience, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, how long have you been on faculty at Southern now?
So I was at the other school for about 5 years, and then I taught at different schools, but here I came back about a year and a half. So this is my second year now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So how are you facing the specific fear of the perception, the gender related differences, and the perception of you as a female in a very, very male dominated, yes. place?
Yes. Well, I have to say it makes a difference that I'm not starting at a new place where I don't know anyone.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of faculty members who are still here. And though our relationship is different now, right? We're colleagues now. Mm-hmm. And I'll just be honest, they've been so welcoming to me and good. Supportive. Mm-hmm. In more ways than I expected. I wasn't sure how they would respond to me being part of faculty. Mm-hmm. And that's just been a sweet delight. And yes. I'm so thankful for these men. And I think it's also trying to build relationships with them. And that takes time and patience. I'm the type of person, sometimes when I meet someone, I just want us to just jump into what we're more the deep issue sometimes. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I need to realize not everyone's that way. And so give them time to get to know me and vice versa. And I have developed some really good relationships with them. And I think also speaking up in meetings as necessary, and not just because I'm a female, mm-hmm. but because I am compelled to say something as a fellow faculty member who is female, and I want to give a perspective that perhaps they are not recognizing. So I want to gently bring that to them and let the Lord convict them of anything that needs to happen.
Well, from your vantage point, you are interacting with a lot of people within the SBC. And I'm sorry for anybody who's not Southern Baptist. They're probably like, I don't even know what y'all are talking about. But from your vantage point, what is encouraging for you in relation to women in the SBC?
Oh, my goodness. There's been a lot of changes, I think, the past few years. And I'm seeing more women in leadership positions, more women who are being given opportunities to teach and to invest in women. It's a slow process. I think that I don't know if that's a bad thing, because change takes time and we don't want to make rash decisions. We want to, my perspective is I want decisions to be thoughtful. So there's longevity to it. And my desire is to pave the way for other women. I want to be a good example. Mm-hmm. I want to give more women opportunities to serve and lead and teach, and whatever the Lord's will is, mm-hmm. At this seminary. And so I feel the weight of that in how I can make a difference in my small circle here. But I do see that in other seminaries, mm-hmm. Southern Baptist, and there are some great women who are teaching God's word faithfully and biblically, leading in a godly way, and being bold and not being afraid to present ideas. So I'm very encouraged by what I see right now, but I also recognize there are a lot of areas for growth,
yeah.
But in God's timing.
Yeah.
I want this to be for God's glory and for his kingdom purposes and not my own desires.
Yeah. Well, I'm thankful for where you are. I'm really thankful. And I think you're doing what you're setting out to do. So
I'm
grateful for that. And I would definitely encourage, as I'm sure you would, any women listening who've thought about going to seminary, to go to seminary and to be trained. You may not, you know, like me, I don't have an official job title that has come out of that. But what I learned there has been so beneficial for me in all the many things that I've done over the years. So switching gears a little bit, I would love to talk about singleness and any fears related to that. And, you know, first of all, yeah, like that's a whole different ball game with your job too, that you are a single woman at the seminary.
Yes.
I just feel like you have such a unique and distinct and different role than most people within your workplace, that I wonder sometimes if that creates a sense of loneliness or isolation for you. And can you speak to that?
Sure, I'd be glad to. I am single and I'm 41 years old, so I'm older single woman. And I'm also at a place that really values marriage. So,
yes,
it's an interesting combination for sure. I tell people, and I speak about this too, and I've written about it, and I am very honest, even in my classroom, that I am all for marriage. And I even pray that if it's God's will, that I would be married someday in his timing. And so I want to clarify that marriage is wonderful and great. And I want to be a good example of a godly woman, whether I'm single or married. Mm-hmm. And that's the greater message I want to send to women in the classroom and other in the church, at my own church as well. But we have so many young women who want to get married, and sometimes they are devastated that they're not married by 25 years old. And for me, I'm thinking you're still so young, but especially when you grew up in a strong Christian home that valued marriage, or your pastor talks a lot about it. And even women who are divorced in the church, or single moms or single dads, just all singles, it's easily to feel, no pun intended, but singled out as second class citizen. Mm-hmm. And I really see an opportunity to encourage single men and women that marriage is good, but it's not the purpose of life. So whether we are single or married, we have an opportunity to glorify God. And how are we being a good steward of that? So that's the message I want to live out and speak however the Lord gives me the opportunities. But so in bringing it back to my workplace context, where I'm working mostly with men and mostly married men. I've learned over the years, because I'm used to working with men. I've worked with men for most of my adult life, I would say, in the Christian context, and I've probably made mistakes and have learned over the years of how not to and how to read men better and not to be misunderstanding their communication styles, things like that. So I am more concise probably in my communication, maybe not right now, but when I communicate with men, I've just learned these differences and that it's okay. Just even practical wisdom such as, so I think there are different views on how you can communicate with men in appropriate ways. And something I'm trying to do different at Southern Seminary is to teach our students that there's nothing wrong with talking to the opposite gender in a public setting.
That sounds terrible. So funny, but... It's true. It's true.
I'm sorry. That sounds terrible, doesn't it? But you know what I mean is...
yes, I do.
Maybe I'm wording it very harshly there. All right, delete that, Christine.
No, you are saying something that's true. It's like something weird happens at seminary where it becomes really silly and awkward.
So what I'm trying to do by example is I talk to my male colleagues, like even in the hallway, in the public places. I'm not ashamed of I'm not trying to hide it. Like I'm doing something wrong. I want our men and women to see this of a healthier example. Yes, yes. Because in the real world, in the church context, etc., you are going to be surrounded by women for our male listeners, and I'm surrounded by men for our female listeners.
Yes.
So I want them to have some good images, examples of this. And this is really neat. Also, I'm co-teaching one of our classes with a male professor, and I received so many feedback from men and women that they haven't had a class like this, co-taught by male and female. And it's a practicum. So they are doing real ministry. And so they're getting feedback from a man and a woman on their ministry experiences. But a lot of them have just really said that it's been so helpful to see us interact together in class and even disagree at times in a respectful way, for us to even joke about things and tease each other in front of the students. The students have really, really, really appreciated
That's
it.
That's great. I love that. Can we go back to the singleness conversation?
Because
when you said the church, you feel singled out within the church. I think I know what you mean, but I would like for you to be able to give voice for, I'm sure all the single people listening are like, yes, help the married people understand. But can you, for our married listeners, can you help us understand why you feel singled out?
There's, whether it's intentional or not, churches can give the impression that marriage, until you're married, you're not a mature being, you're not a mature adult, and maybe you're not even spiritually mature. And so there is this message that you haven't arrived, perhaps, until you're married and maybe even have children. And it's not true. Biblically, it's not true, because we are complete in Christ. But somehow, somewhere, that message is distorted. And I see a lot of single people who feel excluded. It's can be more lonely being a single person. It can be lonely for married and single people, but I think when you have a spouse, it can be easier to meet people. Men and women, and to just invite people and hang out with different people. It just opens up more natural opportunities. So I think there's ways that I hope that church leaders would be more mindful of not just the parents, the married people, but also the single people in their congregation. I had a friend who's an older single woman too, and she's close to the pastor, and it's a pretty large church. And he asked her for feedback about his sermons in relation to singles. And she said, well, you know, you give a lot of examples for married people and even parenting examples, but you don't really talk about single people and how they can apply your message. And guess what? Ever since then, he's been giving all kinds of examples that are more broad. But it was sometimes it's just perhaps mm-hmm. lack of awareness. And yeah. if you're single, perhaps you need to pray about talking to your leader and graciously letting them know, I really appreciate your messages, but sometimes I feel left out when you start talking about the application section. And I would love to hear some ways that I can grow in applying your message. And it can be something simple like that. And yeah. it could be an aha moment for the pastor mm-hmm. who wasn't intending to be that way, mm-hmm. but just didn't realize.
That's really helpful. Well, I'm thinking now for our single listeners, I would imagine, I'm not single, but I would imagine there are times where fear of for the future, if you have this desire to be married and you don't know what's to come. So mm-hmm. what encouragement would you give from what you've learned in your own life to those who are single and do have a fear of the future?
Mm-hmm. Like fear of not being married, do you mean?
I think the uncertainty or just kind of like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to me? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so I would say, I was discipled by a godly pastor's wife when I became a believer in high school. And I look back at my life and I really haven't struggled as much with my singleness because of that strong teaching. Mm-hmm. And she was a pastor's wife. She had children. She discipled us. She took Greek class at church. Like, she was just a great example of a woman who loved the Lord. And she, at that early part of my life, I learned so much that the Christian life is not just about dating and getting married, mm-hmm. but it's about making the most of our lives for God. And that's given me confidence to go to places that I never would have considered, perhaps moving around for the mm-hmm. different job opportunities, meeting new people. It's given me contentment with this area of my life. I don't want to give the wrong impression. There are days when I wonder, will I get married? And especially when you have a PhD and you're teaching in seminary, it's a little bit intimidating for men. I get that. But, you know, one of the encouraging wisdom I've received from other women and men is that if he is the right person for you and you're the right person for that person, for that man, it won't matter how much you've learned and what your job title is. And again, it's just a reminder that placing my confidence, my security in the Lord and doing his will. And that's been so helpful when I'm unsure of the future. That, like Martin Luther, I think it was him who said something about like holding your hands with your plans, holding it loosely in your hands, because it's sort of, I think it's Proverbs 16. It's one of my favorite passages when I'm going through major crossroads in my life and uncertainties. It has things like commit your plans to the Lord and the ideas that he will direct our steps. So I should plan, do as best as I can with the knowledge I have, the wisdom I'm receiving, but ultimately let God be the one who directs who gives the answer. Mm-hmm. And the answer of the tongue is from the Lord, it says, and that's been helpful. So especially when you want to be in control of your future and you want to know exactly what's going to happen, it frees me to be okay with the unknown. And it's a daily battle sometimes, and I just really have to go back to God's truth and remember that God knows, God cares, and He will provide in ways that I may not be aware of, but that's part of trusting God, and I don't have to be fearful and worry. Something I was thinking about, Christine, recently is 2 Corinthians 4:1. It's the one where it says, Paul says, I have it here, therefore, having this ministry by the mercy of God, we do not lose heart. And it's something I'm really clinging to right now, is just that ministry is hard. It can be hard, but we don't have to give up. We don't have to lose heart. And just keeping that heavenward perspective and what is yet to come. And sometimes ministry can become everything, and it's easier to give up then. Mm. And especially as a single person, as a woman in the room full of men, and there are other female faculties, I do want to clarify, but we're definitely the minorities. And so I think it's good for female listeners to just remember that ministry is hard, and that's normal, but like Paul says in 2 Corinthians 4, don't give up, don't lose heart. If this is for the Lord, hang in there, find men and women who will support you and pray with you and for you. Don't try to do it alone, because that can really lead to isolation, even depression and burnout. Mm-hmm. A lot of dangerous thoughts. And so we need each other, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, yes. Well, this has been so fun to talk to you and to learn more about you. And I know that the listeners have been encouraged by you and your life and the wisdom you've shared. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. And I really enjoy this. Thank you, Christine.
Thanks so much for a great season. I hope to see you again in a few months. If you would like to stay connected to me throughout the summer, I'd love that. The best way to do that is through subscribing to my newsletter, which you can do at my website, christinehoover.net, or by following me on Instagram. Those two places seem to be where I write most these days. My Instagram is christinehoover98, so come find me and give me a follow. Okay, guys, that's all for season 6. You know what I'm going to say next. Keep walking forward by faith.